Hi, and welcome to Guideposts. I'm your volunteer reader, Sandy Summers. Today, we will continue reading from the October-November 2025 issue of Guideposts magazine with articles like A Blessed Mess. Faith and Living, A Blessed Mess. I'd invited my new friend to church. I wanted everything to be perfect. Nothing was. By J.C. Nelson, Powell, Ohio. Church is one of my favorite places, but I sure was nervous going that Sunday 2 years ago. My husband couldn't make it that morning. Otherwise, he would have squeezed my hand to reassure me. I had invited my new friend, Chelsea, someone I'd met only a few months earlier, and her two elementary-age children, Olivia and Landon, to attend our church in Dublin, Ohio, and I wanted everything to be perfect. Olivia and my daughter, Evelyn, were in the same kindergarten class and had performed in the school talent show together. While our girls had been practicing for the show, Chelsea and I had gotten to know each other. She'd shared that she was going through a divorce. Even though we talked just a handful of times, my heart ached for her. I knew the situation must be incredibly hard for her and her children. I wasn't sure if Chelsea already belonged to a church, but I felt a strong nudge to invite her to ours. I hoped it might provide her with stability and a sense of community during a difficult season. That Sunday morning, our church was hosting a pancake breakfast before the service to welcome any newcomers, and I was eager to make sure everything went just right. Remembering the long lines from the previous breakfast, I purposely told Chelsea to arrive 15 minutes late so we could skip the waiting. Evelyn and Olivia were excited to see each other, and my 8-year-old Tristan immediately struck up a conversation with Chelsea's 10-year-old son, Landon. I was thrilled to see my plan to arrive late had paid off. We were able to walk right up to the breakfast buffet. Then Evelyn tugged at my arm and whispered, "They're out of cinnamon crumble cake and orange juice, Mom." Even worse, we had to wait several minutes for the next batch of pancakes. Finally, as our group filled our plates, I looked around the room for an open table. That's when I realized all the seats were taken. We wouldn't be able to eat at the same table. "Here, take our seats, we finished," said a gentleman who must have seen the desperation in my eyes. He and his family gave Chelsea and her kids a warm welcome. My anxiety lessened a little. Maybe their first experience here will be all right after all, I thought. But it wasn't to be. I noticed our guests didn't have anything to drink. I got up to get us some water, but it took a while to find a pitcher. When I returned to our table, everyone had finished eating and breakfast was ending. I was so disappointed that I'd missed my opportunity to talk with Chelsea and her kids and get to know them better. It was almost time for service to start. We walked down the hall to check in our kids for Children's Church. "Why is the line so long today?" I wondered. That's when I remembered getting an email about expecting delays due to the new check-in system. Uh-oh. The kids were starting to get antsy. I prayed the line would move quickly. Eventually, we got to the front only to be asked to wait. Because it was our friend's first visit, it would take longer to enter their information, so the staff wanted to go ahead and let the other children through. As we stepped to the side, I leaned towards Chelsea and whispered, "I'm sorry about this." But Chelsea smiled. "It's okay, JC. That's just life, isn't it? We have to learn to be patient." What a relief to hear her say that. At last, the kids were checked in for Children's Church, and Chelsea and I rushed to join the adults. We snuck into the service through the side door and slipped into the seats at the back. The morning had definitely not gone as planned, and I found myself dwelling on all the mishaps. Would Chelsea and her kids ever want to come back? I tried to rein in my negative thoughts and focus on the sermon. Even when we were going through a tough time, we can still be a blessing to others and be blessed in return, the pastor said. His words struck a chord. Perhaps being a blessing to others doesn't mean everything has to be perfect, I thought. I'd been so fixated on Chelsea having a good experience that I'd lost sight of why I'd invited her to church in the first place. She was the one going through a tough time, not me. Maybe just bringing her to our church was enough, and I could trust that God would take care of the rest. The second half of the service was as moving as the first. We witnessed a third grader's baptism, and you could feel the joy filling the room. When the worship music began to play, I noticed Chelsea close her eyes. The service ended. As we stood, Chelsea turned to me. "For the first time at church, I feel like I belong," she said. "Your inviting me here today was no accident." Tears welled up in both our eyes, and we hugged. In that moment, God showed me that everything doesn't have to go right for him to do his work. Running out of cinnamon crumble cake and waiting in long lines doesn't get in the way of his plans. As Chelsea noted, messiness is a part of life. The next time Chelsea and her family came to our church, I was no longer nervous. And now that they attend regularly, one of these Sunday mornings, I bet we'll even get to enjoy some of that crumble cake. A preview from Walking in Grace 2026. We rejoice in our sufferings, knowing that suffering produces endurance, and endurance produces character, and character produces hope, and hope does not put us to shame, because God's love has been poured into our hearts through the Holy Spirit who has been given to us. Romans 5, verses 3 through 5, ESV. I was in the throes of filling out financial aid forms with my younger son, Henry. My dining table was covered with old tax records, and a lot had changed on the online form since we last filled it out with my older son. On top of that, the site kept crashing. The deadline was looming, so there was no option but to keep going. I looked out the window. A host of sparrows was on the lawn. The winter had been strange, unseasonably warm days juxtaposed with frigid cold. I sighed and got up to get a drink. A flash of purple by our mailbox caught my eye. Lilacs. How could that be? Our neighbor's lilacs were blooming. I walked outside to get a closer look. My neighbor joined me, and we stood beneath the row of blooming bushes. "Something right," she said. "I've never seen anything like it, blooming in February." "It's crazy," I said. We both went back inside. I searched for answers online and discovered that lilacs bloom out of season when they are under stress. I thought about nature's beautiful message, that hardship can bring beauty, that we can bloom not despite our challenges, but because of them. Dear Lord, thank you for the intricate lessons you placed in my life, which show how intimately connected you are to everyone and everything here on earth. Sabra Ciccanelli. Walking in Grace is our most popular devotional book. To order the 2026 edition, visit guidepost.org/WIG, write to Guidepost P.O. Box 5828, Tipton, Iowa, 52772, or call 800-932-2145. It is available in a hardcover edition for $16.95 or in a softcover large print edition for $17.95, plus shipping and processing. Animals and Healing. Runaway Farm. He was a cop with trust issues. Duke was a horse with a troubled past. How would they end up healing each other? By Christopher Layton, Bayville, New Jersey. 20 years, I thought, jogging through the neighborhood around the farm that spring morning. Where did the time go? I'd just hit 2 decades as a law enforcement officer here at the Jersey Shore. Retirement was on the horizon, and I was not ready for it. Much as I loved being a husband to my wife, Jennifer, and a father to our 3 kids, protect and serve was the principle I lived by. Over the years, I developed a deep bond with my community and with my fellow officers. There's a saying in police work, there's no such thing as routine. From handling traffic duty to helping folks at accident scenes to searching for missing children, every day was different. Just because I made it through one shift without incident and got home safely didn't mean the next shift would turn out the same way. That's why I was always thinking ahead, preparing myself for every eventuality, except retirement. I believe that everyone has a purpose for their life, a plan guided from above. Being a police officer was mine. I just couldn't picture what I would do after I hung up my uniform. Ouch! A searing pain ran down the left side of my neck, jolting me from my thoughts. Man, I'm out of shape. This was the first time exercising in a year. Jen and I had been way too busy ever since we moved to the farm. That's what we call our log cabin on 4 acres. When the kids were little, we lived a mile down the road and watched the cabin being built. That cabin is my dream home, I said to Jen as we drove past it one afternoon. I love it too, she said. I wonder how much land it's on. Jen and I are animal lovers. We fostered sheltered dogs and had two of our own, but she longed for more. I'd love to have two horses someday, a couple goats, she said, a simple farm. The cabin got put up for sales a few times over the years, but it was well beyond our budget. I like to joke that I'm Jen's hype man, always trying to make her ideas come to life, but this one seemed out of reach. When the kids were teenagers, the cabin went up for sale again. This time the price was lower and our offer was accepted. That place needed love, a lot of love. For the past year, I'd been skipping my daily workouts to chop wood, clear the brush, and fix up the interior. The projects were never ending. Our third month at the farm, Jen rescued two goats. Shortly after that, we rescued two horses, Tally and Duke. Duke was a standard bred, a retired harness racer who used to trot around a track pulling a cart and driver. He most likely got dumped because he was no longer making enough money for his owner. He had many scars along his legs. Jen did some research and learned they come from pin firing, a painful and outdated procedure that involves burning or freezing a horse's legs to treat injuries. That explained why Duke shied away whenever I reached out to pet him. "You're safe now, buddy," I said, but I wondered if he'd ever come around. Still, our farm felt like a dream come true, with plenty to keep us busy when we weren't at our day jobs. That reminded me, I had to split some logs. I picked up my pace and got to our driveway. Ouch, there was that pain again. I told Jen about it. "You know, I've noticed you're a little winded when you shovel the stalls," she said. She was right. I was getting winded easily, even for being out of shape. That month, my police department ran a program offering cardiology exams to first responders. I signed up. "All clear," they told me, but the pain in my neck was still a pain in my neck. At my annual checkup, I mentioned it to my doctor. "Chris, I don't care what the exam showed," he said. "You shouldn't have any neck pain when you're jogging." His tone freaked me out. Then he scheduled me for a nuclear stress test and cardiac cath the next day. That really freaked me out. The news wasn't good. 5 clogged arteries. I needed open heart surgery, a quintuple bypass. Immediately, I didn't even have time to go home and process what was happening. The last thing I saw before the surgical team wheeled me into the operating room was Jen and my daughter crying in the hallway. When I came to, my first thought was, "Did you get what we needed from the farm supply store?" Jen and the kids had to laugh. But Jen wasn't laughing after I was released from the hospital, and she got me settled on the couch back home. "Thank God you went in," she said, "or we would have found you outside on the ground somewhere, dead." It was a sobering thought. A bunch of officers from my department stopped by with a gas-powered log splitter. "We've got you, Chris," my captain said. They offered to drop off meals, help with the animals, pick up the kids from school, whatever we needed. I was so thankful as I was to be alive. Yet at the same time, I'd never felt so useless. I wasn't made to lie around on the couch. I needed to be doing something, helping someone. How was I going to get through 4 or 5 months of this? What if I couldn't get back to full strength and was instead forced into retirement? I couldn't bother Jen with these thoughts. She was about to start a new job running a dog walking business, and I didn't want her to worry. "Stay strong, Chris," I told myself. "Focus on what's ahead of you." If only I knew what that was. Little by little, I went from resting on the couch to being cleared for light chores. Part of my cardiac rehab program was walking around the property. What we needed to build or fix. Then I was allowed to bring breakfast to the animals. "Good morning," I said to the horses that first day. "Breakfast is served, 10 to 4. Tally gobbled hers up. Duke was guarded, waiting until I walked away to eat. Next, the goat enclosure. "Fresh water for you guys. Roger that." It felt good to be useful again. Each morning, after making the rounds, I would come back to Duke. I really wanted to gain his trust, so I would talk to him to get him used to me. Sometimes I'd find myself telling him things I didn't tell anyone else. "I get it. You're not used to taking it easy. You're used to working," I said. "Me too, buddy. Me too." One day I was hanging out by a stall. "I know what it feels like, Duke," I said, edging a little closer to him. "You're trying to adjust to this new life, but you're afraid." I reached out my hand. He let me stroke his muzzle. A small step, but it was something. That's when it hit me. I was asking Duke to trust me, to trust this was his future, that his future was in good hands, that he would be okay. But was I doing that? Not by a long shot. What if I could trust the one who held the greater plan for my life? What if I could let myself truly be present instead of worrying about what lay ahead? Day after day, Duke and I grew closer. Soon, you'd never know he was ever fearful or that I'd been fearful of retirement. "You're different," Jen said one morning when I came back inside. "Different how?" I asked. "It's like you slowed down, Chris," she said, "and not just to take care of the animals. You're more in the moment." All this time, I thought I was taking care of the animals, but really, they were healing me. I made a full recovery and returned to the police department. By the time retirement came, I was totally at peace. Corporal Layton, 10-7, I signed off, end of watch. Several months later, two pigs were running loose around town. Some of the officers from our local police department helped us wrangle them, and Jen and I took them in. Then a cow from a neighboring farm ran right through our gate. A few weeks later, after that, the strangest thing happened. "Chris, come quick. There's a goat on the porch," Jen called while I was out by the barn. Sure enough, a stray goat stood there as if to say, "Help me." It turned out she was pregnant, and she gave birth a month later. All of them were runaways, which inspired our name, Runaway Farm. We became a nonprofit animal sanctuary in 2022 and have since added more goats and pigs, a bunny, another dog. I'll protect and serve whoever comes running our way. It's true that everyone has a purpose for their life, but sometimes the purpose you're led to looks different than you imagined and bigger and better than you ever dreamed. For more on this story, see Family Room. I'm Sandy Summers, and you're listening to Guideposts on Sun Sounds of Arizona, a 24-hour reading and information service for people who can't read print due to a disability. If you missed any part of this program, you may access it anytime on demand at www.sunsounds.org. In addition to the bi-monthly Guidepost magazine, each week we may be reading some of Guideposts' other daily devotions or inspiring stories from Guideposts online. Angels Among Us, Concert on a Clear Night. Dad never said much about serving in Korea, and it was hard to imagine him as a soldier. I remembered him singing, "Not Fighting," by Ellen Van Arsdale, Granger, Indiana. Zoom meetings had become routine by 2020, but the one I was preparing for now was anything but ordinary. It was hard to believe it was even happening. Checking to make sure my internet connection was stable, I remembered the day I'd received an email from a complete stranger. "My name is Twyla Allen," the message had read. "On behalf of my grandfather, I'm looking for an old army buddy of his. His name is Claire Avery. He served in Korea between February and October 1952. I'm hoping I've found the right family." She had. That army friend turned out to be my late father, Jack Flood. Twyla had gotten his name from a page torn from an old address book that her grandfather had saved for more than 50 years. My father had filled out his Indiana address in his own handwriting. Eventually, we organized a Zoom call so our two families could meet face to virtual face. Claire, Twyla, with my husband and my two sisters, waiting to join on our end. Of course, we were eager to hear more about Dad from his Army buddy. We knew nothing about Dad's life during the war. Like a lot of veterans, Dad had kept that chapter of his life to himself. It was hard to imagine him as a soldier, much less fighting in the war. When I remembered my father, he was singing, not fighting. He had a beautiful voice. As a young man, he'd even had a job delivering singing telegrams with birthday wishes and congratulations. He sang constantly around the house, classical music, opera, popular country, Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin. It must have been hard for him in the military. He probably hadn't gotten much of a chance to sing there. I wondered if Claire even knew of Dad's talent. We logged onto the video call at the agreed upon time, and everyone introduced themselves. We learned that Claire, like my father, had never said much about his time in the service. He might never have talked about it at all if not for one of his grandchildren begging him for details. That same granddaughter eventually got him invited to speak at a meeting for veterans near her home in Wyoming. They wanted me to talk about my experiences, Claire told us. I had a tough time coming up with a story to share, but there was one night in Korea that I never forgot. Jack and I were in the bunker, the sound of gunfire and shelling all around us. Soldiers on duty had to shoot every 20 seconds, harassing fire, it was called, so it was noisy all the time. I was feeling low that evening, and Jack wanted to cheer me up. Sing me a song, I asked him. Claire requested Old Man River. My father happily complied, despite the shelling and the gunfire. Claire found Dad's voice so comforting that he encouraged my father to step outside the bunker so others could hear him too. Standing in the trench with his head above ground, Dad sang every kind of music he could think of, just the way he did back home. About 15 seconds after he started singing, all the other noise stopped, Claire said. There weren't any shells or any firing. Nothing. Just Jack and his songs. He sang for about an hour and a half, and all around him was total silence. Maybe it was a coincidence that the ceasefire happened when it did, but in Claire's mind, it was my father's voice that brought peace that night. The sky was clear, Claire said. Jack's voice echoed back from the mountains. I could almost hear my father's angelic voice, as it must have sounded coming from the trench on a faraway battlefield. It was the most beautiful concert I'd ever heard, Claire said. I spent the rest of the night thinking about the music, enjoying the quiet. It wasn't until the next morning that the gunfire resumed. I couldn't have been more grateful to Claire for seeking us out and sharing a piece of my father I had never known. But Claire had more to say. It turned out we weren't the only people blessed by the story. The audience at the veterans meeting in Wyoming had listened in rapture while Claire spoke. Afterward, a woman approached him. She looked shaken by what she heard. My brother served in Korea, she said, in 1952. In the trenches on the very night you described, I know he was right there because he told me about your friend singing. Her brother had been filled with despair that night. In his hopelessness, he had held a gun to his head, the woman told Claire, that her brother had been on the verge of taking his own life. And then he heard someone singing, she said, the most beautiful voice echoing off the mountain. It was that voice and that music that saved him. When Claire heard the woman's story, he knew he had to dig out the address he'd saved for so long and track down his old friend Jack. He wanted Jack's family to know that his friend had saved a soldier's life that night. Jack's peaceful voice, his only weapon. I didn't inherit my father's beautiful voice, but I sing anyway in his honor. I know he sings with me and with the angels in heaven, where the skies are always clear and the guns are forever silenced. What prayer can do. Power in our day-to-day lives. The Gratitude Game. By Shannon M. Huber, Francisville, Indiana. I knew being a middle school teacher's aide would be a challenge when I took the job, but I was unprepared for just how hard it would be, especially when I was assigned to teach an elective Spanish class by myself. Pay attention, por favor, I had to raise my voice to be heard in a room of restless sixth graders. I might as well have been talking to myself. The kids viewed my class as a break from their regular subjects. How could they not? I'd been given no textbook, no lesson plans. I had to create my own worksheets, lesson plans, and visual aids. But my biggest problem wasn't teaching materials. It was keeping control of the classroom. Please get back in your seat, I called to a girl who was chatting with her friend. While my attention was on her, two boys got into an argument that looked ready to turn physical. I rushed over to break up the fight. You're too nice, another student told me, trying to help. At the end of the day, picking up all the spitballs the kids had left behind, I knew I'd reached my limit. Lord, I can't do this for one more day, let alone the rest of the school year, I said. In response, I felt a nudge from God. Thank me for one thing, he seemed to say. It took me a while to think of anything positive from this day of chaos. Thank you, God, that no one threw a punch today. Small as it was, that one line made me feel a little better. I worked hard to find something to be thankful for the next day, and the next. At first, those moments were more about averting disaster. I'm grateful the kids haven't given up on me completely, that I didn't cry in class, that there wasn't a riot. Over time, it became a game, when I seemed to be winning. I caught myself thanking God, not just once, but several times a day. Kate in third period really listened to me today. The kids liked the M&M graph I came up with. One of the kids told a joke that made me laugh. Eventually, I quit counting and just enjoyed every moment. I later found a job better suited to my skill set. Still, I like to think the kids learned something useful in my class. I know I did. Need prayer? Join the Our Prayer community. Submit your prayer requests at ourprayer.org. That's all the time we have today for Guideposts. Thank you for listening. My name is Sandy Summers. Stay tuned for more great programming on Sun Sounds.